Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Ryan Frederick, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Excited to be here.
Great to have you here. For anybody who was at the Austin, our first Entree Architect Community annual meeting, will know our guest here today. You enjoyed a fantastic keynote presentation to wrap up the event and left us with lots to think about with our firms and our clients, a topic that many of us don't really think about often. And so it was fascinating. So I wanted to invite him back here today. Ryan Frederick is the founder and CEO of the company Here, where he focuses on the intersection of place and healthy longevity. He is the author of the best-selling book, Right Place, Right Time, The Ultimate Guide to Choosing a Home for the Second Half of Life. Ryan's company, Here, advises real estate developers on how to create places to help people thrive and provides consumer content to make wise choices about where and how to live. I love Ryan's message, and I love his approach for helping people live better, longer lives, which resonates with us architects. That's what we're doing too. And so, Ryan, when I first met you and we started talking, it was interesting because we were coming to the world from two different directions, but we were ending up in a very similar place, trying to help people live better lives. And so I'm really excited about coming by here and having you come by here at the podcast and talk a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah, no, excited to be here. And having done the keynote at your conference, the passion that you and your audience has, your community is a better term, is quite palpable. And in my lived experience working alongside architects and architects as friends, I feel like it already over-indexes for passion.
Yeah.
And the desire to make a difference. And so you're right, that is where our worlds intersect, is how do we use these gifts and ideas to make people's lives better?
Yeah.
And place has a really key role in all of that.
For sure. And I can't wait to have this conversation. Before we do that, though, I want to know more about you. At the conference, we didn't learn anything about you. So I would love for you to go back as far as you want to go back. Share when you discovered your passion for what you do today, and maybe even who or what inspired you to move in this direction.
Yeah, my mom was just in town this past weekend, and I live in Austin, Texas, and you know, hence close to the conference a few months ago. We have three teenage kids, and our daughter is she's a senior and she's a singer, and she has a musical that unfortunately got delayed. We're recording here in February, and we just had this ice storm that came through and canceled different events. But so I got, my mom came in to go see the performance, didn't happen, but I got a longer time with my mom catching up, and she brought with her a binder that she created, which were like my high school memories. And it got, so particularly senior year. So it brought me back. And so my, in terms of my origin story, I would say a place which we'll get into on its impact on people's lives didn't necessarily register very, very high for me growing up. But I was really wired to making a difference. Born on the East Coast, Virginia, to be exact. And then my dad got a job transfer for his company. We moved to the San Francisco Bay Area when I was about 8 years old. So I grew up there, for the duration of my time, and that area then, and certainly now, has an earned reputation for innovation and just thinking differently. And so I was just in those waters growing up, and I went and, I did have an experience in sixth grade where my elementary school teacher had a passion, and one of her passions was she felt as though older people living in retirement communities were often forgotten about. And so she took our class, and we went and we played recorders, and then we got matched to a buddy.
Yeah.
My buddy was Melba Rollins. And she was in her late 70s, healthy generally, except that she was blind and didn't have any family. And so I had this, and my grandparents were on the East Coast because it's where my parents are from. And so it almost had this surrogate grandmother role with Melba. Officially, we were just meeting every month or so in sixth grade, organized by our teacher. But Melba and I just kept with it. So seventh, eighth grade, I'd go see her. And she, in fact, one time even made a little squirrel for me in our crafting class. And it's better than I could do, but for someone blind, it was remarkable. And so that kind of sparked, just like, wait a second, people are living longer. And she was in a place where she built community, and there were mechanisms for people from the outside to come in. And I guess it planted more of a seed than I realized.
Yeah.
And I went on to study electrical engineering at Princeton. Did engineering internships, and then worked for a software company, investment bank for a year in San Francisco. This is right around the .com era craze. I'm like, oh my gosh, why do people get all caught up? This business thing's really easy. worked for a software company that we had raised some money for, this investment bank I was with, and got to know the leadership team. And they said, Ryan, come join us. And then, investment banking, I didn't have a passion for it. Hours were long. I was really interested in building things, necessarily transacting. And so when they made this offer in stock options, I was like, I got off at literally the same uni exit. It was not a hard decision. So I joined this company. We go public. It's called Critical Path. We did email for consumers, businesses, outsourced email. And it was a ride. It was fun. I had these responsibilities probably more than I should have. At my age, in my early 20s. And then there was an ethical scandal that happened in our sales department. Hmm. Company cratered, a lot of self-doubt, was created for people in the company because we thought we were doing something to improve the world, change the world. But in fact, there was some insider trading and some fraudulent activities and had no idea. And so it was a struggle. And then went back to business school at Stanford and said, what do I want to do with my life? And that's when I reflected a bit and thought, what I really care about is innovating to make the world a better place. It wasn't necessarily technology, although sometimes think innovation must be technology. No, it can be processes and different ways of thinking. And that made me reflect more. And I thought, well, what about people living longer? What about my experience with Melba? What about my experience with some of my grandparents? I got to know them as they aged. What about, how are people thinking about how to make their lives better? And so I wrote a note to people in senior housing. I didn't know anyone, didn't have a particular passion for place at all, But I knew there were people there, and this idea of design thinking where you get to observe people in their environment, I thought that would be a great way to learn, just to be where older people are. And wrote these letters. Only one person responded, Paul Claussen, who was the CEO of Sunrise Senior Living, the largest provider at the time. I flew out to go see him. He says, we don't have interns. We don't pay for interns. And I said, well, I think I can help. And so we worked something out where I dragged my wife along. We lived in the guest house of the Claussens. He and his wife at the time really created assisted living. They were so passionate about it that the art in their guest house was pretty similar to what you might find in a retirement community with kind of airbrushed dogs and so on. I want to live in a community. So I did. I lived a community in Atlanta for a month. My wife, who does love me, she said, I don't love you that much. So she went back to Southern California to be with her family. So therefore, I was unsupervised in my late 20s in a retirement community in the suburbs of Atlanta. Only male in my wing, only person under 75. So I got more attention than I've ever seen before, Mark. My confidence was riding high. I would get unsolicited gifts and desserts and invitations to brunches, and it was great. And so I got to see in that time how place impacts people up front. And we'll get into some of those details later on, but I got to see just, you can take someone in one environment where they're lonely or disconnected and lacking purpose, and you throw them in another environment, and how it can really energize people. So I walked away from that summer feeling that there's some great things actually that retirement communities have, but it could be better, that it needs to be rethought different ways. And so that launched me into this effort, which is the better part of 20 years now, Mark, almost, where I've worked for private equity firms, investing in real estate, particularly for older people environments. And then I've worked for one of the largest senior housing providers based in Baltimore, Maryland, Erickson Living. They have large scale communities. I've been on the board of communities, not-for-profits, for-profit. I've developed innovative models, developed an age-friendly community that I talked about at the conference called The Stories. It's an apartment building outside of DC. I partnered with a public company, Federal Realty Investment Trust. And with my company here, HERE, I have worked with now groups across the world, actually, thinking about how can we create better places for people to thrive. And that has historically been in this a senior demographic, so call it 70 plus. But my book, which came out a year or so ago, called Right Place, Right Time, you referenced earlier, a consumer book. And so people kept nudging me, Mark. They're like, okay, you know all this stuff. Can you help me out? Can you help me out? My family. And so I would. I'd have these calls and provide some advice and how I might look at it. And maybe in an effort to save time, which turned out to be pretty foolish, I wrote this book and to help people. And I'm really pleased with its impact. But what's happened, Mark, is it's opened my eyes to just the role of place and how it shapes us really across the entire age spectrum. How place impacts us growing up, where we choose to go to college, if that's our path, where we are in our early 20s, where we settle down with kids and marriage, if that's the context. And then after that, empty nesters, retirees, we are impacted in pretty fundamental ways. So that has led to this journey now where I, through the HERE platform, really, you know, creating content for people to think more deeply about, you know, these things in different ways. And so it's been a journey. It's been a journey. I would say the commonality has been the innovation, like I described, and this intersection of innovation wanting to make people's lives better in a significant, not kind of boundary way. And I think it's also happened along the journey, Mark, is I've had longer stints in the Bay Area, in the Baltimore area, and now for the last 3+ years in the Austin metropolitan area, and just studying our society and where we are, where now there's more hybrid working, where we're impacted by climate change, political polarization. It's harder to make friends
yeah.
in the way you know it used to be. A lot of different variables, I think, almost make place even more important than perhaps it was, you know, in the past. And so that's kind of where I find myself today is on a crusade of sorts, really an impassioned trying to spark a movement around helping people make wise decisions about where to live and recognizing that when in the context of healthy longevity with 50% of kids born today in the US expected to live to at least 100, recognizing that it's important to eat well and exercise and so on. But actually, I think place and where you live and how do you choose to engage where you live, I think is just as important as all those.
Yeah. And I want to dive into that because it's really interesting to hear your story, all of the innovation and all of the research and the education, sort of generally looking at just how to make people have better lives, right? Research how that can happen. And the result of that is to focus on place, right? You didn't start with place and then work your way out, right? You didn't say, oh, well, I want to focus on the place and how that affects our lives. You did all this research over 20 plus years and you landed on place. Place is the thing that matters to you.
It's fascinating. It's been fascinating for me, Mark. With our kids, we talk a lot about curiosity. In fact, you know, it's common for people to ask kids, okay, what do you want to be when you grow up? Profession. You know, the question that we try to ask with varied success is, you know, what problem do you want to solve?
Right.
And I think when I look at my life's journey, it's really been led by curiosity and thinking, okay, where is my niche? In what way can I make the world a better place, even if it's just a little bit? And where does that journey take me? Because you're exactly right. Place was not part of this. I mean, electrical engineering, oh my gosh, not close to, I mean, I'm a systems thinker now and I incorporate, but there's all the things I learned in college. Oh goodness. Like I'm not applying much of that right now. Not doing much machine learning coding I did at the time, but machine code. But I think what has happened is I do think I've stumbled on something that's almost hidden in plain sight.
Right.
And that is we get shaped by our environment much more than we shape our environment. And that's been led by, as you point out, reading scores of books and research, psychology, some of it real estate based, a lot of it sociology, and how we evaluate different things. So I think it makes certain, you know, roles like particularly profound here. And much of the group that you advise and bring together in community, like we're directly and indirectly helping shape place, you know, right, for people. And the way I talk about it, as I talked about in our keynote, is the framework I use is one that Gallup Healthway created several years ago, and that is this well-being index. They look at well-being through the lens of really five areas. They start off with purpose. You know, do you have something that you can that you can point to every day that gives you motivation and meaning, typically something beyond yourself? And then social connection. You know, are you, do you have a set of relationships, deeper, superficial, a range of relationships that, you know, you can point to? And then physical well-being, being physically active, sleep, the way that you eat. The fourth piece is financial well-being. You know, do you have the financial resources or are you in a path, not just your income, but also your expenses and so on, that you're planning for successfully for longer life? And the fifth piece is place. You know, do you have, or are you in a spot where your preferences and needs physically and emotionally are met by your place? And I would say the aha that I had through this is that fifth piece, place. Yeah, it's important for a bunch of reasons. We're going to get into that in some detail. But place also influences the prior four.
Yeah.
If you have much. Care a lot about, I don't know, you know, serving your neighbors, let's say, well, it helps to be in a place where you know your neighbors, you know, or if you're in a place where, you know, here in Austin, there's a lot of things to do. Let's say part of your purpose is you love playing in a band. You know, music's a big deal here. Well, it's helpful to be in a place where there are shared interests, with those that are, you know, around you, and similar with the social connection piece. If you're in a spot where you can connect with those around you, either through the proximity or some shared values. I just finished a book by Robin Dunbar. He is attributed to the Dunbar number. It's the idea that we have, there's a cognitive limitation as to how many friends we can truly have. And from a variety of different angles, he arrived around 150 is the number, plus or minus. You know, there's a curve there. Some have more, some have less. But one of the things he talks about in his book is and he's world renowned. He's a British anthropologist, wears a few different hats. But he talks about the fact that we are drawn to people similar to ourselves, not a one-to-one match. That might be boring, but there are seven conditions he outlines. And so this idea that if you're around people that are very different than you in their values and the things they like to do, it's going to be harder, you know, to make friends. Whereas if you do have a number of those things in common, you're simply, you know, more likely to be, to find things in common where you're willing to invest in these friendships to get better. So to get closer. And then on the physical well-being piece, place matters again, because if you want to be active, it helps if you're in a spot where you can do that easily. Again, sleep is something we're learning more and more about its impact on our overall health and brain health too. And so that, anyway, bunch of examples with place and how that can happen. And then financial well-being, again, places for many people, if they own their home, it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest assets they have. But it's not just the asset, it's the expenses related to it. You know, it's the implications sometimes when you want to, if you want to sell your house, you can't necessarily soon, or the environment we're in today. You know, even here in Austin, a hot real estate market, there's a lot of for sale signs. So there are impacts, you know, your life and the financial side too. So it becomes, in my view, this foundational piece for healthy longevity. And part of why I've named my company HERE, H-E-R-E, is because there's a sense that both rationally, but also emotionally and psychologically, there's like, HERE, this is it. This is me. And we've all been in places where we've lived somewhere, but it's not home. It's a transient place for us. And then we have places where, no, this is it. This is me. This is here. This is my here. And a level of enthusiasm behind that response. And that doesn't happen by accident, I believe. I believe there is some serendipity, but we have to work for it. And one of the big ahas for me in this journey, as an entrepreneur for sure, but also as I think about this construct of place, is that place is changing always. And so are we. And so as a result, when we're trying to find the right place for us in a given chapter in life, it takes some effort and thought to think, okay, well, where is the place I'm in, and how is it changing, or how has it changed? And then, you know, for us in our life journey, where are we, and how are our needs, you know, changing, you know, as a result? And it may be, in some cases, it may be that your preferences and needs haven't changed much, but maybe your place has changed. Maybe you don't know any of your neighbors. Maybe your physical address is the same, but effectively everything's changed around you. You know, in other situations, maybe your place hasn't changed that much, but what you're looking for out of a place now changes. So I've been doing workshops recently, actually, since the keynote talk, your conference. So bringing people in to have these conversations to create a what I'm calling a right place plan. And it's been fascinating to see people really light up when they see the significance of how people are living longer, and how a lot of it's in our agency, because north of 80% of longevity is linked to our lifestyle and environmental choices. And so they get excited about that. On the other hand, they recognize these can be complex decisions. And so it's worth it, because if you make the right decision, then you know, you have the wind at your back. But people, because it's complex, they need people to help them. And I think that's a key role of architects as partners.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Accurate data is crucial, especially in today's business environment. Outdated and inaccurate data leads to turnarounds, delays, and rising costs. With supply chain and staffing issues, these costs and delays can multiply. That's why a resource like RCAT.com is so important. RCAT works with manufacturers to keep their data up to date and accurate, and offers it to you easily, accessible, and free. Use RCAT's powerful search engine to find what you need fast and download it right there on their site without needing to pay for anything. It's free. So go try RCAT.com today. That's ARCAT.com. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. You know, you mentioned earlier that you are inspired to try to encourage people to make this a movement. And I think very much that you are perfectly timed for that. You know, my view of the world right now, coming out of the pandemic with all of the political issues that we're dealing with, the societal conflict and turmoil that we're experiencing the last 5-10 years and beyond. But right now, at this moment in time, I think that people are looking for that. People are looking for a way to live better, to connect better, to love one another more. I think you can see the societal shift happening before our eyes, where people are talking about how do we care for one another better, right? Rejecting the conflict that the television is pointing at us, and all that's real. That all needs to be addressed. But I think our society is longing to connect and longing to find a place to connect. And so I think you're perfectly timed. I think you need to continue talking, because I think the people who are looking for you need to find you. And I think with Architects is a great place for you to connect, because we are already that's our goal, right? That's why we became architects. We want to make the world better through the built environment, the place on which people work and live. And so with that in mind, what would you say that this community of architects can do to further that mission, to further that movement, to beyond, even beyond the built environment? What can we bring into our firms to explore these ideas and to make the lives of our clients better?
I think there's at least a couple of things as I think about it. And just to respond to your comment more broadly for a moment, I think that we are in a shift or a disruption in our society, and it is sometimes we see it politically. I'm not huge in Facebook, but I know some of the social media platforms, you know, it's almost like people can say what they want without any recourse. And so we may sometimes see the worst of people. But I think some of that stems from a deeper issue around anxiety and a sense of loneliness, yeah. And disconnection. And this is, I believe this has been happening for a while with, so one of the things I have been doing for a while is reading different sociologist books. So, you know, Robert Putnam often is referenced with his book Bowling Alone, came out in the 90s, where he talks about there was this precipitous drop in people bowling in bowling clubs and leagues, and so therefore when you're bowling alone. Well, this was written, that book's a couple decades old now, and these trends have continued. In fact, there's a article that came out in the Washington Post back in November referencing some data from the American Time Use Survey. Since 2013, Americans on average across all ages, socioeconomic statuses, rural, suburban, urban, on average, people are spending close to 10 more hours alone each week than they did in 2013. This was a trend.
Especially with the pandemic.
And this was, and the point I'm making is it was before the pandemic.
Right.
And so it was on this curve. I have a blog about it on the HERE website, but you can see like this is a trend that's been going on. And then it did elevate after the pandemic, and we find ourselves in a spot where it doesn't mean that more time alone means that you're lonely. However, more time alone means that you're not investing in spending time with your friends.
Yeah.
And friendships are a function of time and attention. And so if we do this as a society, I like to bike to work, and I had an office before the pandemic, and I would bike downtown Austin, and I'd bike back. And it was fascinating to me because I would bike at night, particularly during the fall, winter timeframe, and I wouldn't see any energy on the front porch. Oftentimes wouldn't see energy in the kitchens, but I would see a TV on in virtually every house. And we've had TVs for a while, but with our smartphones and streaming Netflix and Hulu, there's more and more now that draws us away from others. And so I believe it's not just place, but how we choose to engage in our place. And so as architects, I think you have, I think a really amazing opportunity for building, continuing to build strong practices that you have, but also impacting people in really positive, meaningful ways. And I think it can start, Mark, by asking questions that I'm sure many people in your community already do today, but just to reaffirm it, people may want to immediately go to, okay, I'm remodeling. I want to add a bathroom.
Right.
Want to have it look like this, you know, these kind of finishes. How do I go do that?
Yeah,
can you give me some clever ideas?
Yeah.
I just think I would encourage everyone in your community to take a step back as that happens. I'd love to have that conversation, but like, what are you really trying to solve for? Like, what does success look like? Like, where are you in this journey to the extent that people are willing to open up? And I'm sure many will. And then you can understand this broader context for which you find people in their life. And as you have this dialogue with them, you may come up with additional ideas that they're not even thinking of.
Yeah.
So we went through this. We went through remodel when we moved to Austin. I mean, bless our architect's heart, because I presented him a 2-page kind of white paper on here's our family values. Here's what we want to plan for. Here are the types of gatherings that we want to have. Here's how we want to engage the spaces that we want to create. And so I made it in some ways easy for him, because I laid it out, and he would fit the archetype of the entre architect world. And so then by giving this larger mapping, he was then able to come up with creative ideas that could help solve for that. It had implications for our kitchen, had implications for where we put our kitchen table. It had implications for how we reoriented our front porch. So I think there's an opportunity to have this conversation around what are people solving for? And at that same time, I think there's an opportunity to help people know, because few people do that, like how place shapes, how shapes our lives. And again, this idea that environment and lifestyle impacts greater than 80% of our longevity, not that you don't necessarily want to make that the whole the main piece that you present to clients, but I think it's helpful to say, actually, these decisions matter. If you are more comfortable having people over, if you're more comfortable, creating an environment where having a dinner of four feels like a special and unique experience, and it leads to lingering after meals, like that has implications for our relationships. So that's one piece. I think another piece in this, Mark, is this idea of creating, I would say, like an agelessness in the design. And I think in some cases, you know, people, they do things and they don't necessarily, they're not thinking about the idea that this could be a home that people want to be part of for a long time. And Taylor Davis and I are leading next week. So we're in the February timeframe. By the time I think this podcast comes out, this would have already happened, but you can look up an expert training session. It's riding the age wave, incorporating ageless design techniques into your practice. And I think there's things you can do. And Taylor is an expert in this in her practice in Alabama. But what you can do is, there are things that you can subtly do that are both attractive and also allow an agelessness to it, such that there aren't stairs or bathroom design or things along the way that in some cases can push people out of a home that they are emotionally connected to and is really the right place for them at that stage. And I think there also are resale implications here too. If you only, we have less than 4% of our housing stock in the entire US has been designed to accommodate people with even just limited, you know, mobility issues. So it's like, it's almost as if as a side, we thought people would never age in any capacity. And ageless design, by the way, it's not just people older, it's people who are have babies and, you know, or even situations where you might have, you know, a high school kid that has a turns their ankle or breaks their leg, like just for them to get around, there's things you can do to make it easy. So I think there's this real opportunity to incorporate in our thinking, you know, ageless practices. We often describe it as, and I'm sure a number of your listeners are familiar with this, but you know, universal design. And I know there are some people where they're pretty strict. They want to implement every element of universal design. I'm not in that camp. I believe that there is an 80-20 rule we can apply here, which ones really, you know, work best, you know, as it plays out. So I think it isn't necessarily a trade-off. I think there's things you can do in a very aesthetic, attractive way. We did something simple in our house. My wife and I are in our 40s. We wanted to make sure that when our parents visit, that it would be a good spot for them. So we also talked to our landscape architect. And we had, at one point, there were gradual stairs, but there were stairs two different ways to get into our front door. And I had to pull a nice, bright guy to pull him aside and say, actually, we can do this better. We can do an attractive, some might call it a ramp. It doesn't look like a ramp at all. It's just a stepless entry from where the car is. That's attractive, same stone. So there's an opportunity, I think, to level up what's possible here that makes our homes have effectively a longer functional life. That doesn't necessarily mean that people should be there forever, but allows the option such that people don't feel like they're forced out of homes that they love.
Yeah, and like you said, it adds value to the home as well. And so that's attractive to your clients as well. I am very, very excited and looking forward to your expert training session. That's part of the Entree Architect Network. That'll be in the archives, you know, forever. And Taylor is fantastic. Taylor is one of the original members of Entree Architect. Back in 2013, when we opened the membership, she was one of the first to join. And she's an expert on aging in place. And that's what she does. She designs homes that are universally designed. So to bring you and Taylor together to put together a session for us that can take all of this knowledge that you have in terms of place and longevity and health and financial well-being and combine it with an expert who is designing homes to be universal and to be able to age in place is going to be so valuable for our community. So I appreciate you for doing that.
I'm excited. She's great. So we share a common alma mater. We both went to Princeton. We're Princeton Tigers. And she had reached out to me before you and I connected a month or so earlier. And I could just sense her passion and energy around this subject. And I think as an architect, you are, particularly when, you know, when you get closer to your client, you're a really key advisor. And good advisors have and sometimes need to lean into courageous conversations. And an example of that might be someone that is looking at their house and they do want to create this ageless design we're talking about, but they may not be in the right physical place. You know, I didn't mention this so far in the podcast, but I will for a moment. When I say place from a physical perspective, it's multi-tiered.
Yeah.
It's your four walls, but it's also your neighborhood. It's, are you in an urban, rural, suburban setting? What metropolitan area are you in? What state, what region, what country, what region of the world? I mean, this has multi-layers to it. And so there are instances where someone might say, I love my home, but if they're really honest with themselves, it may not be the right place for them.
Yeah.
And so there may be some opportunities for architects to have a conversation. Like, you know, this is going to be, it's maybe not the right place if you're, as I think about it, maybe it's too involved to make the changes, but how could we find the right place and then make modifications to that next place to truly make it work well for you? And that's going to be part of what we'll get into in the expert training session is these different ways you can be of help to, you know, to your clients. But Taylor's fantastic and so knowledgeable and has really built this very successful and specialized practice that should be happening across the country.
Right.
And even if you decide not to specialize in it, just to have the ability to have that conversation. Oh, okay, you fit in this bucket. Let me talk about how I can be helpful. I think there's going to be enormous opportunity, in part because a lot of the traditional retirement communities that are out there are not places people want to go to, or they're places that people don't want to go to earlier than they have to. And in some cases, it's a matter of finances that can be very expensive in these places. So this idea of creating options thoughtfully is going to be really significant for our society and really across the country.
Yeah. So if members want to go back and watch that session, it's February 15th, 2023. So whenever you're listening to this, that's the session that you want to go check out. It's called Riding the Age Wave. And so you can check that out at the Entree Architect Expert Training Sessions. Ryan, before we wrap things up, I wanted to get your take on the question that I ask all my guests. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think as a small business owner myself, I think one of the biggest things is being very mindful of where your time and energy. I did this starting about 5 years ago. I track all of my time, and it's pretty easy now with a little app, you know, clock in, clock out around different initiatives. And I think it's really helpful as a small business owner. Just you have limited bandwidth, you have limited resources. Just making sure that you're on top of where you are, where you're spending that. There's a really popular book right now, last few years, called Atomic Habits.
Yes.
And James Clear is the author. He sold like 10 million copies. It's a few more than I've sold of my book. But it's all about these habits. How to get these habits in the right places. And I mentioned that because I think we are a function of our habits. And I also think to tie it back together, I think place is a habit. Like if we set up the right place, or even how we lay out our furniture in different ways, where we put our TVs, where we put our phones, there are ways that we can kind of hack, we can life hack.
Yeah.
Our ways to nudge us towards being better versions of ourselves. And so I think that I would just encourage people to lean into what are those right habits that are formed, and that requires some level of attentiveness to what are my habits today? Where is my time going? Because I know in my case, it's made a tremendous impact.
That's great advice. Do you have a recommendation on an app that we can use to track our time?
Yeah, there's a number of them out there. Yeah, the one that I have works fine for me. I'm looking at it right now. It has it has like a little time thing, and then it has the backdrop of a pig, like kind of piggy bank timestamp. I can't recall actually the name of this one. I'll follow up with you afterwards, but there's a number to choose from.
We will do that. We will put that link in the show notes. So just go to the show notes for this episode, and we'll link to that app as well. His name is Ryan Frederick. The company name is Here, H-E-R-E. You can learn all about Ryan and Here at here.life. So the website is here.life. The book is Right Place, Right Time, The Ultimate Guide to Choosing a Home for the Second Half of Life. The expert training session is February 15th, 2023 in the Entree Architect Network. Also, Ryan, I noticed on your website you have an assessment, Right Place Assessment, that you have. Can you talk a little bit about that, what that is and how that works?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Mark. So in my book, I have this assessment tool that basically allows you to, step one is where is my alignment with my current place? And I got all this feedback from readers. They're like, we really like that. And I said, okay, well, let's put it online, because that's a quick way of establishing, am I in the right place? And so glad I have. It's been because what it does in just a few minutes allows people, like we talked about earlier, Mark, to think about place not just as these physical dimensions and not just a financial asset, but no, it has this broader key influence in our lives and allows people to go through just a series of a few questions and start to say, where are they in purpose and social connection and how, et cetera, and how does it tie back to place? And then it gives people a chart when it's done, as well as a series of recommendations, depending on kind of where you fall in this particular area. And I found that to be helpful to spark, you know, dialogue for people. I actually think it could be a really useful exercise for some of not only the architects here listening, but as a tool for their clients.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are you? Let's just take a look at this. Let's see where, you know, let's start a conversation around this. And I encourage, yeah, it's easy to take. It's available on the website. A couple other things too I'd mention is I do a blog every other week now on consumer content around this intersection of place and healthy longevity. And so I think there may be some relevant content for your listeners there that they would appreciate. You can sign up for that as well. And then just like any entrepreneur, I am in the process now of doing some in-person workshops.
Great.
And what did one recently, you know, here in the Austin area, I had people, actually intergenerational people in their 20s, 30s, also people in their 60s and 70s, and so on. And I also had what I would call the helpers. And in this first one, we have another one in another week or so here, but we had a real estate agent was there, and we also had a couple wealth advisors. And so if you are someone that's really jazzed about this content, this idea of helping people think more deeply about place, if you're interested in going deeper, you know, perhaps with some clients, I'm going to be doing some of these workshops in other parts of the country. But feel free to reach out to me directly if this is an area of interest. I'll give you my email as well. And that's just Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at here, H-E-R-E dot life. It's best way to reach me. So there's a few different ways to engage. And what, just to bring it back full circle, Mark, what I really hope to be a spark, a movement here. Closing thought here. There's about 20 years ago, Dan Buettner traveled the world through National Geographic, and he came back and published a book called Blue Zones. And what he shared was actually people, there are places in the world that have outside longevity, but also outside what I'll call health span level of just quality of health. And he identified five different areas in the world. One in Italy, actually a place in Southern California, a place in Japan, a couple others. And it's a really valuable message that has, I think, just gained steam over time, this blue zone concept. But I think there's a gap right now because most people aren't necessarily willing to pick up shop and move to Japan or, you know, off to Sardinia. A bigger question is, how can we create our own blue zones?
Right.
And I think that's what I'm talking about, is how can we be intentional, create our own blue zones for the right chapter that we're in? Because it changes over time. And I think architects can be a key part of making that all happen.
Yeah, certainly we can contribute to that, both in the work that we do individually, but also to inspire others to also look at their world around them and inspire them to look in these ways. And if we all do that little bit, right, the world gets better. And so I appreciate you, Ryan, for the work that you do, the work that you've been doing for decades. I love the shift to, and obviously it's been an evolution, but that you're focusing on our world as well, right? That it's we're all about place and creating place. And I love that how we come to it from different places and end up in the same place. And I think it is a time where that is very, very needed. And so I appreciate you for being out there talking about it, doing the work that you do, and for coming by here at Entree Architect Podcast and sharing your knowledge.
You bet. Well, kudos to the movement that you've created and the spark and even the more recent developments. I remember when I spoke at your conference and the I think it was 12/21. It was 12/20. 12/12/22.
22 was 10 years.
Yeah, okay, 12. So this awaited, and now the tools that you have to make it even easier for the community to connect, and also the community within specific niches. I believe that this ageless design is not a niche. It's something that every architect should have in their tool belt, but some will dive deeper than others. And so to make that more easily accessible is a service, you know, that will incrementally make everything better. So grateful for what you're creating as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you. And you're welcome back anytime. So as we dive deeper into this stuff, I will love to have you come back and talk more.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much, Mark.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, and share a link to this episode with a friend. I know I say this every episode, but I'd really love for you to send me some feedback. Share a rating, write a review, however you want to do that. And please share a link to this episode with a friend. Just send it off in an email. Say, hey, take a listen to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, because that is how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. I appreciate it. Share a rating, write a review, and share a link to this episode with a friend. Thank you to all our sponsors for this episode. Links to all our sponsors and all the resources that we discussed today in this episode are available at the show notes for this episode, and all the episodes can be found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. That's the media network that's dedicated to architects, engineers, and construction pros. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. If you like this podcast, if you like Entree Architect Podcast, I think you'll love all the podcasts at Gable Media. Go check them out at gablemedia.com. My name is Mark R. LePage. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. I appreciate you. Love, learn, and share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast. where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.